morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today is Friday, January the 14th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. The Norwegian Nobel Committee says that Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who won the award in 2019, bears the special responsibility for ending the bloodshed in Tigray. And the World Health Organization reports the surge of the fast-spreading Omicron variant in Africa appears to have peaked and is flattening in most African countries.
Over the past week, cases plateaued compared with the week before, dropped by a little bit, 0.2%. Infection have also declined in three of Africa's five sub-regions.
Nigeria's Twitter users are welcoming the decision by the government to lift the ban on the social media platform.
We're glad the Twitter ban is off because in the last few months it has been really a very big headache for our business. We have lost many customers. We'll not be able to reach out to our customers.
The African community in New York City is rallying behind the victims of the recent high-rise apartment fire that killed 17 people, many of them children. We'll have these stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And for our top story, the Norwegian Nobel Committee, which awards the Nobel Peace Prize, says that Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who won the award in 2019, bears the special responsibility for ending the bloodshed in Tigray. In a statement to AFP, the committee chair, Berit Reis-Anderson, said that, quote, "The humanitarian situation is very serious and it is not acceptable that humanitarian aid does not get through sufficiently," end quote. The committee said that Abiy was awarded the Nobel Prize, quote, "on the basis of his efforts and the legitimate expectations that existed in 2019.
Voice of America!
Nigeria has lifted a seven-month ban on the popular social media platform Twitter, which it imposed after the site deleted a tweet from President Muhammadu Buhari. Nigerian authorities at the time said that Twitter was using its platform to be used for, quote, "activities that were capable of undermining Nigeria's corporate existence." Adeola Odunowo is a Nigerian business analyst and entrepreneur. After the lifting of the ban was announced, he spoke to a number of Nigerians, especially business owners in Lagos. He tells me that many of them are welcoming the lifting of the ban. So Adeola, just to remind our listeners, why was Twitter banned in Nigeria in the first place, and what kind of concessions were made for it to be allowed to operate in the country?
Nigerian government suspended the social media firm last June after the president tweeted about the 1967 Nigerian Civil War and the concessions that Twitter had to meet before the ban could be lifted was to register in Nigeria, appoint a designated country representative, also comply with the tax obligations in Nigeria. Twitter also had to enroll in its portal in Nigeria for direct communication between government officials and Twitter, and the government also wanted Twitter to act respectfully in accordance to the rules and regulations of Nigeria.
So is it fair to say that Nigerians have not been using Twitter this whole time since it was banned?
Many Nigerians, especially the youths, had continued to access the Twitter platform using virtual private networks, VPNs, but most corporate organizations and media outfits obeyed the government's order to ban Twitter.
And how did the Twitter ban affect life for Nigerians, especially those that were using it? And how did the Twitter ban affect life in the country, I guess especially for those who were using it professionally?
The ban cost the Nigerian economy millions of dollars. In fact, a financial analyst puts the estimated loss to the economy at over 700 billion naira. I spoke to Seyi Adekoya, an entrepreneur based in Lagos. This is what he had to say.
We're glad the Twitter ban is off because in the last few months, it has been really a very big headache for our business. We have lost many customers. We'll not be able to reach out to our customers. Our business involves training, recruitment, and we do a lot of target audiencing using the Twitter. And when the Twitter has been off, we've been cut off from our customers. Of course, it has cost us millions in the last few months. But now with the Twitter ban being off, we're looking forward to having our customers.
And I also spoke to Toyin Ademarati, a data scientist and digital marketer. Listen to what she had to say about the effect of Twitter ban on her business.
Prior to the Twitter ban, I used Twitter as a space to run campaigns and adverts and as well as connect with clients. The moment the ban was placed on Twitter, I had issues with running my campaigns. I couldn't deliver most of the projects I had as hand, and due to that, I lost clients and even lost funds. Now that Twitter is back, I am hoping to use Twitter again as a tool to further help strengthen my brand and as well get more clients and, of course, make more money. Thanks.
And do you have an idea what prompted the lifting of the ban? Was President Buhari under any internal pressure of any kind to restore Twitter?
Not really, especially considering the fact that there has been several back and forth conversations between the federal government and the Twitter team. But the upcoming elections in 2023 might also be a pointer to the lifting of ban, since Twitter plays a very significant role in disseminating information to the public.
That was Adeola Odunowo, a Nigerian business analyst and entrepreneur that reached him in Lagos, Nigeria. The World Health Organization reports the surge of the fast-spreading Omicron variant in Africa appears to have peaked and is flattening in most African countries. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This is a bit of good news for a continent that has been devastated by the COVID-19 pandemic, which is entering its third year. As of now, the World Health Organization reports more than 10 million people in Africa have been infected with coronavirus and more than 230,000 have died. The UN Health Agency reports Africa appears to be emerging from its fourth pandemic wave, driven primarily by the Omicron variant, which quickly overtook the Delta variant to become the dominant strain. After a six-week surge, WHO says Omicron has recorded its first drop in cases. If this trend continues, WHO says it will mark the shortest-lived surge so far on the continent. Abdou Salam Gay is Director of Emergency Preparedness and Response in WHO's Regional Office for Africa. He says it is premature to let down one's guard, as the latest data was collected during the holiday period, when numbers tend to be underreported.
Over the past week, cases plateaued compared with the week before, dropped by a little bit, 0.2%. Infections have also declined in three of Africa's five sub-regions. Only North and West Africa are currently witnessing an increase in cases.
Anita Graham is in the Department of Pulmonology, University of Witwatersrand, South Africa. She says the Omicron variant has accounted for 95% of all infections during the region's huge fourth pandemic wave. However, she says there have been far fewer severe cases, hospitalizations, and deaths than from the more virulent Delta strain.
However, we are still seeing very serious infections and admissions in patients who are unvaccinated, and also in patients who have comorbidity, and this includes the elderly population. Our vaccination remains the best, most effective way of protecting ourselves and our patients from severe disease, hospitalization, and death.
Unfortunately, WHO officials note just 10% of Africa's population of 1.2 billion is fully vaccinated, compared to 50% of the wider world's population. They say the coming months will be critical in Africa's efforts to improve vaccination rates. They say Africa has the know-how and the tools to tip the balance against the pandemic if it is given the supplies and means to roll out these life-saving vaccines. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. The African immigrant community in New York City is rallying behind the victims of the Bronx residential apartment fire that killed 17 people and injured more than 60 others. New York City authorities say the investigation in this tragic incident is still ongoing, but initial reports say that the fire was caused by a malfunctioning space heater. Most of the victims of the fire were from the West African nation of the Gambia. 8 of the victims were children. New York Mayor Eric Adams called it a global tragedy, and local volunteers from African diaspora organizations are working to raise funds to help the survivors. One of such organizations is the African Communities Together, an organization of African immigrants fighting for civil rights and a better life for African families in the U.S. I spoke to Richard Ajemang, its New York director.
Robert, what can you tell us about the African community in the Bronx in New York?
The African community in the Bronx is a very strong and vibrant community. It's composed of many different communities in countries within Africa. You know, you have the Gambian community, you have the Nigerian community, the Ghanaian community, the Senegalese community, the Ivorian community, and so on. And so though it's known to be heavily populated by Western Africans, there's still other mixes of different countries within the community, which is why it's very important to recognize, even though some people outside of the community, they'll say the Africans, they might be referring to the Western Africans or mainly Nigerians because they're the most heavily populated there. But there's many, many other countries and
communities represented
in there.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk about this tragic fire. What is the history of this apartment and how does it come to have a large resident population of Gambian immigrants living in this particular building?
In this particular building, because it is a building within the housing complex that is within that neighborhood. Mm. And as the Twin Parks complex, it is a part of the NYCHA Housing Authority. And so this particular building is a building that is for as long as 2 decades and maybe even further going back, has been a place where a lot of the Gambian community has gathered and been able to find housing and been able to thrive and organize and gather. The communities that gather here, immigrant communities, usually when somebody gets to a place, they try to bring others along. And so sometimes a lot of people will gather in one apartment. And then when a person gets to a solid financial place, they'll try to find another apartment within the building and so on. They'll bring family over or they'll hear about people coming and needing support. And then before you know it, this building is now a very highly populated Jamaican, community or Gambian community or Nigerian.
Correct.
It snowballs after people begin to gather.
What sort of help are you providing to the survivors and what are some of their urgent needs right now?
We as African Communities Together, we are working with some of the other organizations. We haven't been directly in touch with the Gambian Youth Organization yet, but we are setting up to begin to help them with coordinating a lot of these efforts. This kind of tragedy isn't something that one organization should be left to deal with on their own. This is for all of us to gather around. They must lead the charge because they work directly in that area. These are their people and we follow their lead, but we give the support that will enable them to ensure that their people are taken care of. And so we're helping with gathering of materials. We're helping with interpretation needs for when they need to get resources from the city that have been promised by the mayor, resources from the state that have been promised by the governor and all these other entities that we do interact with on a normal basis. We, African Communities Together, we work with the city on several projects and we've been in communication with the city as well to try to ensure that especially the Gambian families have been taken care of and make sure that they have all the resources they need. We're opening our office to try to help with whatever is possible. And, you know, the more that we know, I will definitely get in contact with you to share more about that. Whether it's the donations, you know, financially or supplies or goods, whatever the case is, we'll definitely share that information.
That was Robert Ajemang. He's the New York director of the organization African Communities Together. I reached him in New York. Human Rights Watch says that the international community has failed to hold Africa's Sahel region governments to account for abuses committed in the fight against terrorism. In its annual World Report released Thursday, the rights group notes that governments supporting the region issued several statements denouncing attacks by Islamist groups. But Human Rights Watch says that those same governments were reluctant to condemn abuses by pro-government forces or to press authorities to investigate. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou in Burkina Faso.
Human Rights Watch, HRW, has released its World Report for 2022, which gives a country-by-country review of human rights in more than 100 states over the last year. In the report released Thursday, which cites reporting by VOA at times, the monitoring group criticizes governments in the Western Sahel region and their international partners, including France, the EU and the US, for reluctance to hold security forces to account for human rights abuses. Ida Sawyer is the deputy director of HRW's Africa division.
We've seen how international partners have regularly issued statements to denounce abuses by Islamic armed groups, but they remain reluctant to denounce abuses by pro-government forces or to publicly press the national authorities to investigate the allegations of abuse.
Sawyer added that some international partners offering military support in the region were also failing to hold their own armed forces to account for alleged abuses.
We have specifically called for a thorough investigation into allegations that a French airstrike killed 19 civilians in Bounty village in central Mali last January.
France has denied the findings of a UN report into the incident, saying the people killed were combatants and the report is biased. Meanwhile, Sahel governments have rejected accusations by HRW that their armed forces are committing atrocities. For example, Burkina Faso's government denied an HRW report in 2020, saying that more than 180 people were executed and buried in a mass grave in the northern town of Djibo. Mali and later Niger and Burkina Faso have been embroiled in a conflict with armed groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda since 2012. According to data by the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, more than 8,000 civilians died in the conflict in those countries during that period. The report says that Sahel governments and international partners have taken steps to engage security forces in human rights training. The report also expresses concern for the human rights of people displaced by the conflict. The United Nations Refugee Agency says there are almost 3.5 million displaced people in the Western Sahel. Alexandra Lamarche, senior advocate for West and Central Africa at Refugees International, an advocacy group, told VOA there are
numerous reports of atrocities and human rights violations, including murder, rape, torture, and violent persecution based on ethnic and religious grounds, all of which fuel intracommunal violence and continue to force people to flee their homes and the temporary displacement camps they sought refuge in.
She added that little effort has been made by governments to protect the displaced from such abuses. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou.
Mali has accused France of breaching its airspace and threatened unspecified consequences if it happens again. Annie Risenberg reports from Bamako in Mali.
Mali's military government Wednesday condemned France for flying a military plane into the country from Ivory Coast this week. In a statement, government spokesman Colonel Abdoulaye Maiga called the flight Tuesday from Abidjan to Mali's city of Gao a clear breach of its airspace. Maiga also accused the French military plane of switching off its communication with Mali's aviation authorities. He threatened consequences if the incident is repeated, saying Mali's government would refuse any liability relating to the risks to which the perpetrators of these practices could expose themselves. A French military official who refused to be named denied the claim to Agence France-Presse, saying all procedures were respected and that Malian authorities had approved the flight. The French military maintains a base in Gao. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and with that we go to Yaounde in Cameroon with Samson O'Malley with the latest on AFCON 2021. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sport with the latest update from the 33rd edition of the African Cup of Nations currently holding in Cameroon. Host nation Cameroon hammered Ethiopia 4-1 in their second Group A match at the Olympic Stadium in Yaounde on Thursday. The win saw the Indomitable Lions, who are placed at the top of the group standings, become the first team to reach the knockout phase of this year's tournament after producing a brilliant second half performance, while the Walia Ibex remained fourth on the table. Widely considered to be the underdogs, Walia Ibex took a surprise lead just 4 minutes into the match as Dawa Hotessa fired past goalkeeper Andre Onana to make it 1-0 to Ethiopia, turning home a lovely cross from the right which was delivered by Amuel Gebremichael. There were wide scenes of jubilations in the city of Yaounde and across the nation after the victory by the Indomitable Lions of Cameroon. In the second Group A game, Burkina Faso's Hassane Bande chested home the ball 6 minutes before halftime to give the Stallions a 1-0 win over the Cape Verde Islands. The Stallions, who lost their opening match to host Cameroon, came into the West African Derby without captain Bertrand Traoré, who tested positive for COVID-19. Day 6 of the African Cup of Nations will host another mouth-watering fixtures. Morocco will face off with Comoros in the 2021 African Cup of Nations Group C match at the Stade Omnisports Amadou Ahidjo in Cameroon on Friday. The Atlas Lions secured an impressive 1-0 win over four-time African champions Ghana in their opening group match on Monday as Safiane Boufour grabbed a late winning goal for the North African side. Morocco are currently placed second on the Group C standings and a win over tournament debutant. Comoros will see the 1972 African champions move closer to qualifying for the knockout stage. Also lined up on Friday is a massive 3 points that will be on offer when Malawi and Zimbabwe lock horns in the Group B encounter at the Kalkok Stadium on Friday. The Flames began their adventure in Cameroon with a 1-0 defeat to Guinea on Monday when Isiaga Silla's 35th minute goal proved to be the difference in Bafou Sam. Meanwhile, Senegal will renew their rivalry with their neighbors Guinea in the Group B match at the Kalkok Stadium in Cameroon on Friday. The Lions of Taranga were made to sweat for a 1-0 win over Zimbabwe in their opening group match, which was played on Monday as Sadio Mane grabbed a late winning goal for Senegal. Senegal will be without Idrissa Gana Gueye and Fode Balo Touré after the duo tested positive to COVID-19 when they faced Guinea, which will be keen to take control of Group B by defeating the National Elephants. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Ngara, Cameroon. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson, and have a great day. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. Well, thank you for spending this week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voanews.com. We're also on all social media platforms. We are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, where you can watch our videos. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next week, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.